So clothes. You ready to talk about our clothes?
I am wearing. We came in. We met up here. We came in the studio and
immediately saw
we shook hands as we normally did, and there was a moment of recognition between the two of us that we were wearing essentially the exact same clothes.
And it's so there's not even a good word for two guys who don't care about clothes who actually come together. White t-shirt.
Mm-hmm.
What is this kind of sweater called?
I don't know what this is. It's two different brands, but they look the same.
They both have the their tiny neck zipper.
Yeah,
zipper down. They furl over.
They zip into a V neck, but then you can zip it up, and it kind of keeps your neck warm.
Yeah,
yeah.
I never thought about that. Sort of a collar of some sort.
And they're both
same dumb color,
slightly off, kind of olive greenish gray.
Yeah,
blue jeans. I don't know what this would be called. Blue jeans.
And brown shoes.
Brown shoes and. You're wearing a hat. I was wearing a hat.
Yeah.
Very similar. And
this has never happened before.
Yeah. Boxers or briefs?
Boxers.
Yeah.
I hate admitting that.
Yeah.
Why did you make me?
Wool socks?
I think they are.
Yeah, mine are wool socks.
There's nowhere else we can go.
There's nothing else there.
All are check. We are go.
You've got a gold wedding ring, the same, yeah? I've got my gold wedding ring, obviously. You've got...
You're wearing a watch?
I'm wearing a watch.
I'm not wearing a watch.
You're not wearing a watch.
I have contacts in.
I have my contact. Well,
these are reading glasses.
Okay. I have my contacts.
Which
right.
I use for looking as well.
I'm very close to that. I'm very close to needing reading glasses, even with contacts.
For people, yeah.
Because it's gotten to the point where the prescription has to be, if I want to have good, long distance, because I'm nearsighted. It's getting to the point where I can't hold something up in front of me very well and read it with my contacts in. And the ophthalmologist says, we're like one step beyond.
They do let you know.
One step before.
We're getting close.
you're getting kind of bifocals. And I said, well, I don't want to be there yet. I don't want to do it yet. I'm going to delay that. I'm going to put that off. I'm not going to let that happen yet.
I love when people take their medical care into their own hands just through a decision.
I'm not going to do it yet.
I don't want the heart surgery.
So now I'm actually reduced. I'm only in my mid-40s, but now I'm taking when you take a pill bottle out, like an aspirin bottle, and there's no way I can read that writing on it anymore. At least not if I'd have to take my contacts out or take my glasses off and then, do you do this thing with the bright, you have to find the bright light and then you're kind of going back and forth a little bit to kind of just find... Can I read that font if I get just a little more light? Just a little. Oh, I think I can make it out now.
Make it out one or two letters.
Yeah.
So you do have reading glasses or you
no,
don't?
No, I don't. I don't. Not yet.
Do you want to try these?
No.
Why don't you just try them?
I don't want to.
Try them.
I don't want to.
Just look at something.
I don't want to. I don't want to know that it's going to be better with them. I don't want to know.
Get your old man prescription out.
Really,
see if you can read it for the first time.
To.
Know what you're taking. See how much you're supposed to take. Just look at something with it. So look at something you can't read.
All right. Let me see. All right. Let me see if I can find something here that I can't.
Like your phone. You probably haven't seen anything on that for years.
It's pretty small. I'm trying to think. Again, distance-wise, it's sharp. It's perfect with contacts. Everything is...
Perfect. You seemed perfect.
But everything within 3 feet isn't. All right. Let me see.
How about this paperwork?
No, here. All right. Now this is giving me vertigo.
Well, you don't spin your head around like a
no. That to me, everything's blurry. I can't.
You can't.
I don't like that.
What if you looked at that? Bring that close.
Let me see it.
That text.
This is like a form with some fine print on it.
Yeah.
See, I can read that all right. That's not
all right.
But
now,
I have to have out here.
All right. Now put the things on. I call them things.
Oh wow, that magnifies everything. Look at that.
Now you can read it.
Oh damn, you're right.
You don't know how to use the glasses and the microphone at the same time.
No,
they bang together.
Well, when I'm on the air in the morning, I will sometimes just wear glasses to the contacts, and I'm constantly hitting the windscreen.
Oh, that's bad.
They've got these microphones at the windscreen. Boy, that does make a difference.
And you've never tried reading glasses with your contact lenses?
I haven't needed them before. The contacts have been enough.
You have needed them. You just did not accept.
What are these, medical forms? What are these?
Since I've started, I've never stopped filling out forms. I've been here for a year full time or whatever they call it.
You're still filling out forms.
And I'm still sending in forms and I'm still not doing a bad job and I still don't know what they are. every couple weeks, Kelly Mahoney will send me hey, can you, I
just
sent this to you,
this out,
fill it out.
Yeah.
So I fill it out. and I'm, you know, I got to get all this information. Like, I'm supposed to fill out, like, what the last visit to the doctor, when that took place, when that was, and what happened. And I have no idea.
No, I like when HR just says, just sign this. I don't read it. Just put it in front of me.
Well, you're at that level where you can just say that. I have to actually do the forms.
No, I have to do the
forms. You can just go, fill it out for me. And then some lackey will come along.
No, I'm not. That's not true.
It's true.
That's not true.
Air Personality of the Year, 2014.
Yeah. Well,
Rick Ainley was Air Personality of the Year 2014 for all of the Granite State.
Well, it's quite the honor.
Did we talk about that before? Because if we did, I'm going to stop dead cold right now.
We must have. Okay. I don't know. When's the last time we did this?
Oh, man. It's been 3 months or so. 5 months.
It was over the fall.
It's like every half a year
they gave me a plaque and said that you were Air Personality of the Year.
I feel like we talked about it.
Which came as a big surprise. Honestly, it did. I didn't.
Did you know you were nominated?
Well, you're nominated by people sending an entry in.
Did you know, though?
And Rebecca Lavoie here at the station,
she'd sent it.
Took some tape from the show, and then she put it together, and she apparently put the entry in. And I knew she was putting an entry in. I didn't know for what. Because they go around to all the different personalities and reporters at the station every year, and they say, give us your best stuff. And Rebecca had said to me, well, I'm going to put together a bunch of things, and I want to put together one for you. And I said, I really don't care to do it. And she said, okay, well, just give me something. And I gave her some files. I spent about 10 minutes pulling them out. And she said, I'll edit them. I'll do it all. Because I said, I'm not going to do it. I've never heard the thing that she put in. Hmm. So I don't know what she put in. And then this was back last summer. And the things are awarded like in October, September, October, I think October. And I never go to the award. I never go to those things. I don't care to. I don't care to hang out with a lot of guys in Hawaiian shirts telling bad jokes.
Mystery.
And eating kielbasa. It doesn't interest me to hang out with a lot of radio people, to be honest with you. And I know that sounds snobbish, I guess. But I've worked in commercial radio long enough to know.
You're done
with
it.
So I don't. Yeah.
You found out that night.
Man, my 4-year-old was in the tub. I was giving her a bath, and the phone went off with a text from the program director, and he said, congratulations, you won. And reading that at first, I'm like, is this spam? And then I realized, no, it was from Michael. You know, congratulations, you won. What have I won? You know, and I didn't know what they were talking about.
And then a
bunch of other people texted me, and then the phone rang, and apparently I had won some award. And then a few days later, they gave me a plaque.
That must have felt
good. And a bagel. I got a free bagel. The station bought me a bagel.
Wow.
Yeah, that was pretty heavy. The thing was, they got bagels, but I was on the air, and by the time I got back to the kitchen, most of them were gone.
So they got bagels to honor this
Yeah,
happening.
They got bagels to honor the...
Like
the,
Rick got the award, let's have
everybody
bagels.
Everybody had bagels.
And then you had to work.
And I got
and
half
you
a
got
bagel.
The last bagel.
I got the last bagel.
That's how it should be. You got the plaque. You got the award.
Yeah, I got the plaque. It was nice. But you know, it doesn't...
Oh, it changes. Changes everything.
No.
The
big thing that changes everything is we have a producer now.
Right. Morning Edition producer.
A Morning Edition producer, which makes a big difference. Mm. And that's prompting me to get the phone because people want to... I need to be more in contact later in the day.
Well, now you have a team, sort of.
Sort of, yeah.
And you have to kind of, you know, go back and forth in that quick way we all expect now. It's very instantaneous.
I know, and I'm really happy that the producer is there, Michael Brindley. He's fantastic. He's great. He's awesome. But this just means now the expectations have gone up.
Well, you're going to be the guy that you said, I think you swore never to be.
You know how And you've known me now for several years doing mornings at different places, or in two different places. I like that style. People say, how can you get up at 3 o'clock in the morning? But you don't understand. 6 hours of my workday, I don't have to deal with anybody. I don't deal with office drama. People leave you alone. They figure, you know what? He shows up on time and sober, leave the morning guy alone. You know what I mean? They're just happy you show up every day. And that's it. I love that. I love that. And by the time lunch rolls around, I'm gone. And I love that lifestyle. I'm home with my kids. I'm doing my own things. I like that lifestyle.
I want to do that myself.
Well, yeah, but see, now there's expectations.
Now you got people hanging out with you.
Well, now we want to be able to have you interview people and, you know, they want things. And it's like, I just, you know, I want to do my thing and then get paid. But now...
So now you're looking for a way to get Brinley fired.
No, not at all. Maybe we'll just give the show to Brinley and I'll produce.
Why not sometimes?
No, that's much. That's too much work.
Yeah.
I'll be honest. Being a producer is too much work.
For you.
So being the host, the producer does a lot of the work and you get the awards.
That's what all the people on the air know that trick.
This is the key here.
That's the glamour job.
I get all the glory because my name
right.
gets said every 10 minutes.
Right.
His name doesn't get said every 10 minutes.
Maybe you should say his name every once in a while.
I do. I started to.
Yeah?
Yeah. I'm Rick Yanley with the producer, Michael Brinley.
Well, I've noticed, too, that your pieces had both your names on the web.
Rick well, see, that's another thing. Brinley. He does all of that.
Yeah.
I record the interview, and he chops it up,
yeah.
and he transcribes it for the web.
That's nice.
And he posts it.
Carry on.
Well, you know, I just was showing him my phone.
Right.
Yeah. It looks like a BlackBerry.
And it's full of Pez.
And we've agreed that, yes,
it
could. 10 years ago, I would have been arrested for witchcraft for having it. But now it looks so ancient.
It looks like you get some penny candy inside
it. It's like a 6 or 7 year old device, and it has no use to modern society. It is an artifact that you would give to your child to play with or your dog to gnaw on. It has no value to anyone but me. You know what I mean?
Yeah. But now you're getting ready to upgrade. You have to for work.
I've decided that I need to, yes.
Yeah.
But the pressure from everyone in my life to be more in touch constantly and to be able to send them high-definition, high-quality video at any moment of whatever I'm doing, apparently.
They're forcing you to take a selfie.
I don't know. I it's not that I can't.
Like, Rick,
I just
where's
don't.
The selfies?
I can. Well, it's funny because I have a camera, obviously, in the phone, but it's not a very good camera, and I can't even send the pictures out with the plan I have on this phone.
And you like both of those things.
Well,
you
I
like that rottenness.
I do actually like. I had a smartphone before this, a very early one that had a great camera, and I liked being able to send pictures immediately up to back them up and so on, to have for the kids and things like that.
Right.
I can't even do that with this phone. And the reason is I'd still have the old phone if I didn't wash it. Mm. I was that guy. I left it in some pocket, and it came out of the washer.
How long did you persist in trying to recover that phone?
I gave it 2 days.
Did you open it up and blow dryer? What was your maneuvers?
I had heard somebody said, don't turn it on, open it up, take the battery out, use a hair dryer on it, dry it out, which I did I gave it like a 5 minute hair drying exercise. And then I just left it open to the air on the counter in the kitchen for 2 days. And then I decided it was dry enough. It seemed like, well, maybe. But of course, the whole thing was nothing but screen, and the screen was going to be ruined. It had been, gone through a rinse cycle.
And this is like a $4 phone, right?
This was like a probably a $80 phone, $90 phone.
Okay.
It was probably under $100 at the time I bought it.
Okay.
And it did everything. It had it was a touch screen, and it played video, and I could send data and everything with it. It was a little slow. It wasn't as good as a modern smartphone, but it did fine, and I liked it. Had all my music on it. I was very happy with it. And I was very sad.
You put it back together.
I did.
And then
nothing.
And you turn on the button.
Well, I charged it. I tried to plug it.
Oh, yeah.
And it didn't even give me an indication it was charging.
Hmm.
I mean, there was no indication that it was alive in any way. But I thought, I will leave it plugged in overnight and see what happens.
Now, did you immediately, when you could tell there wasn't charging, did you just unplug it and slide it across the table into the trash?
I didn't.
Or did you put it in a special place to recheck it again later? Like maybe in a week. I'll give it a week.
I didn't do that exactly. I threw it in. We have like one of those, like a bowl that's like a junk drawer.
Yeah.
Which has like, various cords and.
We have that.
It has paper clips and it has broken pencils or it has, I don't know.
We have all our
There's a ruler in there in case the kids ever need a ruler for homework or something. This is just junk. And it just sits on a shelf in the kitchen. And I threw it in there, and I had forgotten about it. I went out. I had to buy a new phone. I couldn't wait anymore. It's been 3 days without a phone. I had to go get a phone. So I bought this cheapy thing.
Full of candy.
And this is 4 years on now, or 5 years on, that I've been living with this.
And now, you don't like Apple, and you're thinking about a Galaxy. Are you sure? You're just definitely sure?
Well, you know, my wife uses that. Yeah. She loves it. And I might as well just, I'm going to give in to, you know, I'm not going to the Borg. I'm not going to the Borg. I'm not going to the iPhone route because I personally cannot. I just can't deal with Apple
products. Resistance is futile. Join us, Rick.
Thank you, Patrick.
I extend my hand. iPhone welcomes you.
I will not do it. I will not do the iPhone route.
If anybody has a suggestion for what kind of phone Rick should get that's not an iPhone, that suits his personality,
yeah.
I hate iTunes.
I hate Apple.
And you mostly hate anybody that has one.
I don't want to. No, that's not it. I just don't want to be locked in. I do not. I don't like the proprietary nature.
Right. The top-heavy king of your life.
Nope.
Standing on top of your head.
What I do like about this cheapy little phone is I plug it into the computer and I just drop a file in. If I want a podcast or I want a photo or I want a song, it takes me literally 10 seconds.
Right.
I drop, boom, it's in. There's no syncing. There's no handshaking with some Borg satellite somewhere. There's no talk back to Apple somewhere. They don't have to track what I'm listening to. Nobody knows that I played Green Day's Jesus of Suburbia 10 times last month.
Shake, shake.
There's none of that. I don't have to, you know, account for anything. Nobody's marketing to me about it. I just drop the MP3 in there, and there it is.
It sound so simple.
And also, I don't, Apple's, their algorithm, the sound thing is, everything has to be their bit rate. I don't like that, like a higher bit rate.
Mm. Have you heard about the Neil Young thing with the high quality music?
Yeah, I've heard he's trying to do something with that. Yeah, I'm not that anal.
I want him to sell me on that, though.
I mean, I don't need to install a reel-to-reel in the car. You know, I don't need to put a 24-track studio in there.
He's been outraged for years. I mean, I heard about this 5 years ago, I think.
He thinks CDs are Satan. He's pretty convinced that CDs ruined everything.
MP3 is... He has his own new Neil Young format. Mm-hmm. I don't know what it is.
The Neil Young format.
Yeah, it's just called Neil.
You just get an aging hippie to come and put the record on. That's what the Neil Young format is. You hire an aging hippie. He comes in. He cleans your stylus.
You ready, man?
And he drops the record on very... And then he cleans the record very gently. It's all in a hyperbolic chamber. It's all sealed in, and then it's a vacuum. They don't allow the record to be in air.
But I would love to go to some, you know, do they still have tweeters, Tweeter, et cetera? They still have that?
I think they're gone.
Oh, man, they were everywhere. Yeah. Well, they weren't everywhere, but they were on the radio.
In New England,
about Tweeter, et cetera. Like time.
It's like a New England
video. Tweeter's amazing wrap-it-up early.
Yeah. Tweeter. You go in there, though, and it was very, it was a bit snooty.
Oh, yeah. I walk in the door and walk right out. I didn't belong there.
Yeah.
That was for the...
You couldn't listen to Dust in the Wind in there.
That's for the hi-fi guys.
Yeah. When did you stop listening to, that stuff? We were talking about, super-produced rock pop of the late 70s, early 80s stuff, like the Bostons and the Kansas and all that stuff. When did you kind of graduate out of that?
I don't feel like I ever really have. I mean, I would still listen to it.
Yeah.
But yeah, I've as we were talking before, I kind of grew up in a what's a word better than stingy? We didn't have a lot of stuff.
Yankee thrift?
Yeah, Yankee. My parents were Yankee, very Yankee.
Yeah.
So I only had that one Paul Simon record, you know. For 10 years. When I was done.
You didn't buy any other records?
I didn't really have any money.
Yeah.
I mean, I would do jobs. I mean, I was like a paper route kid and things like that, and I would have jobs. But I always thought that records were kind of a luxury item because that's how my parents kind of taught me. So at a record would be, I don't remember how much they were, $8.
Yeah, they were expensive. It was a big decision. Like if I decided to get a record a month, you know, I can only get one.
And I could never buy one record if I just liked one song. like I wanted to know before I bought a record that I actually liked every single song.
Would you buy 45 RPM records at all?
I didn't really respect them.
Because they were like $2 or a buck. I mean, they were cheap.
I mean, by the time I was done with high school, I had probably like 10 records, and I don't know. I mean, I'm sure I had a few 45s.
Yeah.
But I sort of thought of them as lesser. And I did like the album experience. I thought that was a better thing. But it was really hard for me to buy a record for lots of different reasons, partly my upbringing, and then partly this kind of OCD, like, I better like every song. And you never could hear every single song. Mm-hmm. And I would hear them on the radio. And, you know, I would listen to the radio, and, you know, this like a thing. I'm sure you did too. Songs that you loved when you were little, like, I can't wait to hear Safety Dance. And I'd search around the different stations, six different ones that could play it. And you would find it after
usually
an
after
hour.
A few minutes, yeah. They would somebody would play it. Yeah.
It had weird taste.
I love Safety Dance.
We can dance if we want to. We can leave your friends behind. Cause your friends don't dance, and if they don't dance, well, they're no friends of mine. See, we can go where we want to, place where they will never find. And we can act like we come from out of this world, leave the real one far behind. We can dance.
I loved Safety Dance. I thought it was great. I liked a lot of that early 80s kind of post-new wave pop stuff.
Yeah.
You had Safety Dance, 99 Luftballons from Nina. Yeah. What was another one, though?
Gripping.
Did you like the German version or the English version better?
Oh, I remember that debate, but I never understood it. I don't know if... I feel like I didn't hear one of those versions. I'd always be like, what? Like, I couldn't follow that discussion.
I don't think... you wouldn't play it very much on the radio. They'd play the English version, obviously.
Mm. Yeah. Oh, the German version? Yeah, they probably played that only in the cool.
They would play that like on FNX, which was the alternative station. Doesn't exist anymore out of Boston. And they would play the German version. Mm. And they would play The Cure, which you couldn't hear anywhere else back then, except maybe college stations. Cure. There was some of the stuff that...
The Smiths?
Yeah, and I think it was hearing some of that stuff, and I was still deeply into like the classic stuff and the Floyd and the Beatles and the Rush, but I was also concurrently listening to a lot of that in high school. So you had this kind of dichotomy of the two kind of rock worlds colliding.
Yeah, and they didn't kind of go together in a way. It was sort of like in your mind, they weren't friends.
Well, see, to me, they did. To me, it worked, but I think it's because there were these tribes. There was like, well, that's like your older brother's music, kind of hippie, kind of heavy, kind of, you know. Like the kids who listened to Black Sabbath and Ozzy were never the same kids that were going to be listening to The Cure. Mm. Yet I would like both. And I would listen to both.
Yeah.
Like I could really get into Crazy Train and really get into, you know, like Fairies Wear Boots from Sabbath. Mm. But within the same half hour, I would put on The Cure's... You know, Kiss Me. I mean, I would do that. I would be that guy.
Right.
I could do that.
But you didn't have any other friends that were kind of like, hey, let's go back and forth between these. But you didn't have anybody that sort of could join them together like you?
Yeah, there were definitely some people. Yeah. I mean, it wasn't like the worlds would never meet, but it wasn't.
Well, it was a big.
It wasn't a big lap. A big kind of.
There's music is such an identity associator for people. You know, it's like if you're a Black Sabbath kid, you're not going to admit to the softness of The Cure.
Right.
Or if you're a Cure person, you're not going to admit to the kind of crassness of Black Sabbath.
Right.
You know, it's part of your identity. And, you know, you
especially when you're 15 or 16.
Yeah. And you even dress like it. You could tell who liked The Cure, who liked Sabbath based with minimal clues. Even like the kids that weren't wearing like the black T-shirts, you sort of just could tell who liked what. Just there'd be a little renegade quality to their lumberjack shirt.
And I think, and I think people, again, especially in adolescence, you will gravitate towards that. Like if people perceive you that way, well, then you're like, well, that's where I belong. So even if something would pull you another way, even if you were, you know, heavy metal kid, and you heard like 10,000 Maniacs, you're like, well, I can't really be seen. Mm. Listening or kind of checking that out because that's not technically where I belong. So, you know, you wouldn't have that kind of courage until you're older to really kind of explore those other genres.
Courage.
Hey, it couldn't come at a worse time.
Courage.
A little tragically hip.
Is that a Tragically Hip?
Yeah.
Unless that's the band from Canada that the Canadians are always like, why doesn't the rest of the world like Tragically Hip?
They're right. Tragically Hip is great. They're another one of those kind of slightly weird bands that Canada does.
Yeah.
Canada does that so well.
Right.
They're weird, but yet really good. I've seen them live several times.
Mm.
Although I haven't bought anything from Tragically Hip in like a decade, maybe more.
Well, are they still together? I thought they were long.
Oh, maybe.
Oh, no, I have no idea.
See, that's how out of it I am. Hmm. But they were. I really got into the Hip. I don't know, maybe mid-90s. Hmm. Really liked the Hip.
That's before America even knew not to care about them in the mid-90s.
That's right. That's before America even collectively ignored them.
Well, Canada spoke up at some point.
Before they even got to know them, they were ignoring.
We'd like you to listen to Tragically Hip. Could you please?
But that's very Canadian. We'd like you to. Would you mind?
Yeah.
Could you? No? Oh, no? Okay. Oh, well, thank you.
Yeah.
Sorry to bother you. That's very Canadian.
And then they went back to Canada.
And then they just went back to Canada.
They all came down.
I mean, they went down to Detroit a little bit, maybe a little upstate New York. They looked around. They said, would you kind of? And then collectively they got, and then they just went back up.
You can't have success as a Canadian in the United States unless you pretend you're from the United States for a good portion of your career. And then later on you go, hey, by the way, I'm from Canada.
It seems like that. Yeah. That's what Neil Young did.
Yeah.
Yeah. Although he never went back. He just kind of went to California and stayed there, I think.
I don't know what that is.
Rush did that. Rush got all their attention in Cleveland and went big out of, across the Midwest or something and spread that way and before they got any real success outside of Toronto. A lot of Canadian bands do that.
So it's the only way to do it. Look at the Tragically Hip. That's what happens when you
I think Tragically Hip, though, is still... worldwide is still pretty big.
Yeah.
I mean, for a Canadian band.
People in the United States don't care about that. We only care about what's big here. No. If you say you're big in the world, we're like, eh.
Isn't there a top 40 artist? Is it Taylor Swift or somebody's out of Canada, aren't they?
I bet Taylor Swift. She feels Canadian to me.
Shake, shake.
I don't really even know her music.
I don't really accept Shake It Up. Yeah. Is it Shake It Up? Shake It Off. Shake It Off. Mm. It's Shake It Off. Yeah, that's it. I don't even know the song. Yeah. I just know that I cannot resist its infectiousness.
Hmm. I'm gonna have to listen to it. I probably know what it is.
It's just a simple little pop song.
Yeah.
And it's actually very minimalist, really, when you listen to it. I think as most pop songs are, the great ones.
There are a lot. I mean, yeah.
Pop songs are.
They usually have just a really cool beat, mm-hmm. maybe a really interesting bassy noise, some weird synths that come in now and then.
Yeah.
To sparkle
just a little,
it up.
Yeah, a little texture here and
then
there.
The voice is there. And then maybe when during the chorus, there may be a huge wall of sound. But,
We were talking about the Cars earlier, and you were saying how the Cars just changed, because you were listening to a lot of that shimmering, very overproduced rock stuff, like Boston's and all that. Yeah. Which, I mean, you could really appreciate the craft in producing a song like that, like More Than a Feeling, which I think is a great anthem. But then you heard, like, the Cars, and they're, like, great pop songs. Really deceptively simple, very minimalistic.
Well,
which is little things that come in that...
It changed my taste. When I heard the Cars, like, it refocused my attention on these little tiny, like, bumps of sound and the quirkiness of sound, where coming out of the sort of late 70s wall of noise, like, just crystally sharp, big, beautiful sounds that Boston and Yes and all these other bands would do. The Cars are just this little boom, 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 and it's like you just, it suddenly was this, your eyes, you suddenly lowered them to the ground and you were staring at this tiny little thing that was just looking at you very strangely.
So instead of this cinematic looking at the big mountain, you were like all of a sudden focused in and hemmed in. And
you couldn't go back in a way. I mean, it wasn't that I suddenly didn't like Boston, but it warped my taste, in the same way that, like, they might be giants. If you hear them and like them, it's suddenly you're like, ooh, I like this oddness.
Mm-hmm. Particle man, doing the things a particle can. What's he like? It's not important. Particle man, is he a dot? or is he a speck? When he's underwater, does he get wet? Or does the water get him instead? Nobody knows. Particle Man.
And it changes what your interest after that is going to be in some way. So like the next Boston album, maybe I listen to it, but I'm not going to stare at it wide-eyed in the same way anymore.
Well, it seemed like throughout the 70s, we were just awed with the fact that we had 48 tracks or something. Like, it was a big deal. Like, suddenly there were 24. So now we have to use everything. We have to throw everything at the wall, make these big. And in the early 80s, you had the big drum sound. Like, everything was, you know, big, big booming drums.
Right.
And then somebody came along and kind of stripped it down a little bit and added a little bit of, kind of quirky sensibility to it. Bowie could do both of that. Bowie was one of those people who could create these incredible big shimmering sounds in some ways, these big stage productions. And then on the next record, they could just be these stripped down kind of minimalist, you know, synth pop songs. But
he was one of those artists. I mean, he just always felt like a painter guy. Like, he just did music in a way different from other people. Like, he approached it, and it gave him pleasure in a way that didn't, that other people, like, he, I don't know, he just was so, just, like, tightly in his own spot, you know? Just, there's, he was his own category of Bowie.
Yeah, there is Bowie, and there is everybody else, because he could go project to project, it'd be completely different.
Yeah.
I mean, completely, you know, other than the voice, you would not have been able to identify. You hear, like, that kind of almost exploration of 50s, '50s kind of, you know, young Americans era stuff.
Yeah.
And that was 2 years after Ziggy Stardust.
Right.
Which was, I mean, kind of T-Rex sort of guitar driven, you know, glam rock. And then, you know, he went to, you know, Berlin. And then did, you know, like, you know, the
Didn't
Heroes.
You do that last
and did,
time?
You know, I did.
You said Berlin last
time? It's because, you know, people, you know, they're always, when you say Berlin, New Hampshire, you say Berlin. It's like Berlin. No, Berlin. 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 It's Gorm. I'm just going to say Gorm from now on.
Do you ever say Milan?
Milan.
Do you ever have to say Milan?
No.
On the air?
No.
If you ever do,
nothing
it looks
ever
like,
happens there. Look, no.
It's
no.
very small.
No.
But you have to say Milan. They taught me how to say it up in Milan.
Really?
Yeah. I was calling it Milan. If I don't know,
completely
I make
different. Yeah.
If I have no idea, I make things fancy.
I like that.
Like, if I don't know, I'm gonna say, "Hey, I'm gonna take it to the top."
When you write about lemon, do you write Lemon?
Yeah, I would. Lemon. If I went to a town called Lemon.
Lemon by light of the moon.
Yeah.
In Lemon, New Hampshire.
By the light of the moon,
off the mountain, Lemon. All right, that's it. We hope to do more of these.
We do.
Maybe.
Let's promise to always
do
them.
By spring, we'll get another one in?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
We'll do that. All right.
Good night, light bulb.
Extinguish the lamps.
Wherever he would go, the old lamplighter of long, long ago, his snowy hair was so much whiter beneath the candle glow. The old lamp lighted of long, long ago. You'd hear the patter of his feet as he came toddling down the street. His smile had a lonely heart, you see. If there were sweethearts in the park, he'd pass a lamp and leave it dark, remembering the days that used to be. For he recalls when dreams were new, he loved someone who loved him too, who walks with him alone in memory. He made the night a little brighter wherever he long, long ago. Now if you look up in the sky, you'll understand the reason why the little stars at night are all aglow. He turns them on when night is here, he turns them off when dawn is near, the little man we loved of long ago. He made the night a little brighter.